This episode is brought to you by the Weather Channel. What does the Weather Channel app share in common with a personal trainer and a life coach? It's an ally on your quest to wellness. What you do with its insight is up to you. Like running an extra mile when air quality is good, or checking your allergy forecast so not even ragweed can disrupt your chi. It's more than a weather app. What in the weather are you waiting for? Be a force of nature with the Weather Channel app.
Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Ginny Urich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside. And I have a guest on today that I've been a fan of for a very, very long time. If you're on Instagram, you for sure have seen him. He holds up these really cool whiteboards with just an amazing, a one sentence. You're like, oh, that's going to change my life. And just fantastic information about parenting. Dr. Joel Warsh, who also goes by Dr. Gator, and he's going to explain that to us in a minute. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on. I'm such a big fan of your podcast and your work as well. It's such an important message.
Oh, thank you. And I mean, I have really been touched by so many of the things that you've put out there. You are a board certified pediatrician in LA, specializing in parenting wellness and integrative medicine. You have a new book coming out that's available for pre-order now, Parenting at Your Child's Pace, which I love that title. I so believe in that. The Integrative Pediatrician's Guide to the First 3 Years. Grew up in Canada, all sorts of degrees and all these different things. And you have, I mean, you just offer a lot. You got a lot that you're offering for parents. It's 20-minute bite, like classes that they can take, 20 minutes, you know, kind of all the main issues that parents are dealing with. So I really appreciate you taking the time to be here. Let's just start off with the name. Like, so your last name is Warsh, but online you go by Dr. Joel Gator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So everybody thinks it's a Florida thing. It's not a Florida thing. I grew up in Toronto, nothing against Florida. It's actually a wife thing. My wife's last name is Intelligator. That's, you know, her real last name. People don't believe it, but it is. And so people started thinking, oh, Dr. Gator, they thought it was funny, and it kind of stuck, and it's more memorable maybe than Warsh. So kind of stuck.
I like it. That's where people are going to find you if they are on social media. You actually have a couple accounts, but one of the things that really drew me to you were these, you know, one sentence. And sometimes you're like, gosh, a sentence can really change your life. So I thought maybe we could start off there with just a couple of them, a couple of the ones that really caught my eye, and talk about some of the other things that you are an expert at. But before we get that, can you just, for people who don't know, I'm going to just kind of myself, what is integrative pediatrics?
To me, I mean, I don't think there's a specific definition of it, but to me, I take it to mean blending the best of modern Western medicine with alternative practices. So a lot of people think of integrative medicine as kind of woo-woo out there stuff. And it can be. I mean, you can go pretty far out there. But I think, you know, in general, what I try to do is bring the best of both worlds together. There's a lot of natural remedies out there that have a ton of research that have been used for decades that have minimal side effects. And so I try to learn about those and offer those as much as possible in my own office and talk about it a lot more, because, you know, it's really, I feel like it's really frustrating with the regular medical system. That's what got me into integrative medicine in the first place, is that we're just so quick to give a medication. And that's because it's the only thing we really learn about as a doctor. It doesn't mean there aren't times where a medication isn't warranted. I mean, we're very lucky that we live at a time where we have antibiotics that could save your life, or maybe you need a steroid, or maybe you can go get an MRI. I mean, these things are all great, but we most certainly overuse them. We're very quick to use them, and any medication could potentially have side effects. And if you need it, you need it, and that's fine. But there are so many other alternatives that you can try most of the time, because most of the time when you're sick or not feeling well or just trying to get some immune support, you don't need a heavy medication. Something more natural is going to be the way to go and can support your body. And there's a lot of evidence about a lot of these things that it can be helpful. It's not going to maybe do the hardcore level of changes in your body like a medication will, but that's not what we're looking for most of the time. We just want to support our body to do what it's supposed to do.
Well, that's interesting, because I was going to start one place, but that actually triggered my mind, because you were saying that, and I thought this was really interesting, something about how, like, things take time and it may not be as strong or as quick, but you were talking about, okay, there are no quick fixes. I mean, what I noticed about you, Joel, is you just say it like it is and how you've seen it. I mean, you're working with kids, you're working with families. I'm just going to put out there what I think. Say there are no quick fixes to chronic diseases. Something that took 5 years to develop will not improve in a day. You say, enough with the excuses, kids are really struggling. So maybe we should start there. One of the things you say is that 1 out of 2, half of all children have some sort of chronic illness. We are failing. Where are we at? And what has changed to get us to this spot?
Yeah. So if you go back maybe 50 to 100 years, if you look at the research, maybe 5% of kids had a chronic disease, and a chronic disease meaning something that you're taking medication for, something that's continuous and you have to deal with on a more long-term basis. So thinking of things like asthma, allergies, autoimmune conditions, anything of that sort would be under the umbrella of chronic disease. And now when you look at the modern research, it's somewhere around 50%. I mean, there's so many different studies, so you can quote different numbers, but it's somewhere around 50%. It doesn't really matter exactly what the number is. The number is way too high. You know, whether it's 40%, 60%, doesn't really matter. If you have two kids, one's going to have a chronic disease, that's insane. We shouldn't be here. And we're failing our kids in that sense, because we should be figuring out why. We need to figure out why so we can go in a different direction. This saying that it's just genetics just does not make sense. I mean, there's certainly some genetic component to most chronic diseases or most illnesses, but our genetics haven't changed that much in 50 years. What has changed is our environment. And so there are one or most likely very many things that we are doing that are leading to chronic disease, that are tipping kids over the edge. And we're just seeing this more and more because of our lifestyles. And so the good news from that is that, you know, if it's something that's changed over 50 years and this is part of our environment, then it's also something that we have some control over and we can do something about. I think it's just important to identify it because there are all sorts of problems in the world and there are lots of things to pay attention to. But the fact that basically everybody's sick, that most adults are on a medication or multiple medications, that our life expectancy is going down, and that our kids are getting diseases that didn't even really exist when we were younger, not that long ago. I mean, I don't really remember peanut allergies. I don't really remember, you know, every other kid having asthma, autism, all of these things. I mean, certainly it was around, but nothing like it is today. And the fact that we're not stopping and saying, like, look, this is a huge problem. We need to tackle this. We need to tackle this at an individual level and at a, you know, country level, at a world level, but we're not really doing that. We really just focus mostly on treatment. And that's where I go back to, you know, what you're saying about the whiteboard. It's there aren't quick fixes. I mean, yes, if you're sick, you might need a steroid that could help you today, but you don't have a steroid deficiency, right? You have a problem. Something's triggering these symptoms. Giving you a medication is just a Band-Aid.
I think it's so important that you're saying it. It's so important that you're saying it strongly. I mean, you're saying the things that, and I think we live in a world where people kind of like shy away from saying, I'm like, hey, your kids should be outside. 4 to 7 minutes a day is not enough. We don't really talk like that. It's like, oh, well, you know, what you're saying, no, this is a thing. Mm-hmm. And I like this because you're hearing the excuses. We all have them in our minds, but I'm sure that you're hearing them like out loud. You say enough with the excuses. So here's what people are saying. I'm too busy. It's too expensive. I'm tired. I'm overworked. You say, so is everyone. But also, half of all children have a chronic disease. So you need to figure out how to protect them from being the next statistics. You say, if we keep making the excuses, it will be 100% of kids. So I love what you have. You have sort of like this prescription that every doctor should write. And I thought this would be a cool spot to start. A prescription that every doctor should write at every checkup. So maybe we could talk about a few of these things. One of the things is just stress reduction. Why is that important? And how can we do something about that in our homes?
Yeah. So I mean, just going back to the kind of the first point first that you were making with is I don't mind talking about anything. You know, I think it's important that we have these open discussions because the problem is getting so big and people are afraid of discussing it. And, you know, I'm used to on social media getting people saying, you know, whatever, that's fine. It doesn't really bother me anymore. But I feel like as a doctor, our job is, you know, my job is to discuss health and to work on prevention and to prevent kids from getting sick. That's why I went into it. And as a parent as well, I think that's so important. So I don't think we should be shying away from these topics. And, you know, as you said, to me, it's very frustrating that we have this excuse now. And I get it. I mean, trust me, I get it. You know, I get that people are busy. I get that things cost money. That is all true. And anytime I say anything like that, people say, well, what do you know? What about the single mom who's working three jobs? Yeah, I get it. I mean, there are reasons why people are busy. There are reasons why people can't afford things. There's nothing that's untrue about that statement. But what's also true is that our kids are getting sick. So if we don't prioritize our health and we don't look at the situation, then yeah, you're going to be busy and you might not have the money to do whatever you feel like you need to do, but then your kids are going to get sick. So that is the reality of what's going on. And so if we're not mindful of the reality of the situation, then we're not going to make a change. And there are many things that you can do within the timeframe that you have and within the financial budget that you have to make changes. And that's what I'm always trying to get to. It's not to shame anybody for, you know, you can't get an exercise trainer or afford to do that. It's okay, well, then what are the simple things that you can do? How can you be mindful? How can you make different choices that maybe cost the same or even less, but at least you're thinking about health and then you're making changes. So I think that's kind of the perspective that I come from, and not to shame anybody for not having, you know, enough time or being very busy or being a single parent or whatever it is. Yes, I get all of those things. And there are certain situations where maybe you can't do all of these things, but every person purchases food for their kids, right? If you're going to the and you're eating the food at home, so then you can be more mindful of what you purchase. You can read the labels. You can choose things within your budget that may be slightly better than the other thing that you were choosing before. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to cost more.
You bring up a really good point, right? So I talked to this woman named Emily Morrow. She's got a Instagram is called Really Very Crunchy. And she's got a book coming out soon. It's called Really Very, it's funny. It's a really funny book. She's like making fun of the sort of crunchy lifestyle, but also weaving a little truth in it. And the book is fantastic. But what's interesting, Joel, is that she ended up being that way, right? She's like, you know, paying attention to the toxins and what food are we eating and our water and our air and, you know, sort of basic things because they didn't have any money. You know, she Googled, like, how can I eat, like, you know, in a way that doesn't cost quite so much. And it said basically to eat whole foods, like make sure that, you know, the packaging has 5 ingredients or less and, you know, and that type of thing. I thought, well, that's really interesting. So it's like, okay, to your point where some of these things could be cheaper or maybe, you know, maybe it's one of those things where, okay, it's going to take you a little bit more time to prepare the meal, but your kids can join in. And when you do things with your hands, it helps your brain release dopamine. So this is like a natural stress reliever that you're chopping vegetables together and you're spending time together and all these benefits are stacking up. And, you know, you need a little bit of extra time because you're going to have to make this meal a little bit more from scratch. That means you don't have time to drop your kid off at that extra program that's adult directed and costs money. And so you're home together and there's just a little bit more free time, a little bit more boredom. And those things are good for kids, a little bit more time to play outside. So when you look at it from the perspective of like how our society wants us to be, which is like run ragged, do this activity, then yeah, you might be like, okay, no, like we don't have any margin for that. But if you sort of strip away those things that maybe are not giving the benefits that are touted, like, well, maybe it's more doable than I thought. So to your point, it's looking at things and you even say, they make small steps, but be thinking about it. So if we start with this, you know, simple piece of, it's not simple, this piece of stress reduction, kids are under a lot of stress. I think way more so than we were when we were kids. Mm-hmm. What are some things that parents can do about that?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's one of the main foundations of our health. And, you know, stress in the short term is a good thing. I mean, if something's chasing you, you need to get away, that's what stress is for biologically and genetically. But right now we're living in a state of chronic low level stress and our body is just not used to that. And it creates this inflammation in our body and everybody can handle a little bit of inflammation, but over time that wears you down. And if you think about it, if your body's dealing with this stress and your hormones are all off and your immune system is dealing with this, then it doesn't have the capacity to deal with all the other things. And so you're more likely to get sick. I mean, there have been many studies over the last, you know, 50 years, 100 years, where they look at people getting sick and their immune support. And I don't know who was, you know, volunteering to get viruses put in their nose, but people were, you know, doing it back in the day. And, you know, people that reported they were more stressed, they're more likely to get sick 2 or 3 times. And we know this. This isn't, you know, rocket science or new information, but if you're stressed, then you're just more likely to get sick. And you know, as you have an exam, you know, if you're going through school, what happens right after? You get sick. It's like, it's just the way that it is. That's how our body functions. And kids are more stressed than ever because, you know, they're exposed to the news, they're exposed to social media. They're looking at their social media feeds all day. Their school is getting harder. We're putting kids into boxes and making them do more and more work to try to think about college and all these things that maybe, you know, people weren't as worried about before. And so these things just add up. And we're putting kids into a stressful situation that they never really had to deal with before. And I think that's one big part of the bigger problem that we have. I call it the seeds or the foundations of health. So stress, environment, and toxins, exercise, diet, and sleep. And to me, that's such an important part right at the beginning of the book. You know, what's interesting about the book and one of the reasons why I wanted to write it was a lot of parenting books come from amazing practitioners who are not doctors, right? That's usually like the therapists or someone like Emily Oster, who, you know, is an economist, or, you know, Dr. Liza Pressman, Tina Payne, all these people, I adore their books. They're amazing, but it's a different perspective. They're coming from a therapy perspective or a mom perspective or whatever it is, but you can't parent in a vacuum. There's also the health side. And so combining both of those things was really important for me. And that's what I tried to do in the book, obviously talk about regular parenting issues, but also from a health sphere. And one of the things in the intro chapter they talk about is the Dr. Gator smoothie. Right? And I put that in air quotes, because if you look at any or most health books these days, if you watch like the, you know, daytime TV, the guru comes on, talks about their fancy smoothie that's going to cure everything that ails you. You're going to take a bunch of celeries and apple juice and whatever, and you drink this every day and it cures all your health problems. So, like, you know, kind of making fun of that a little bit, or just kind of playing off of it. And so the Dr. Gator smoothie, it's not a real smoothie. It's how do you have a kid that's healthy? Well, you bet a big dose of the seeds, right? Your foundations. And then you think about community and love and getting outside and getting your vitamin D, making sure you have your nutrients. I mean, that's the Dr. Gator smoothie. That's the reality. And that's what's going to get them healthy. Yeah, stress is a big part of that. That's one of my seeds or foundations, because sure, it's like, you know, if we're stressed all the time, then you're going to get sick. That's just how it is.
Sure. So, okay. I've got a kid that's in second grade. I mean, this is what I'm hearing a lot of the time. Kids in third grade. Everyone in the class has a phone. They're getting homework. They're in the school all day. They're not having much recess. Actually, I was just talking to mom yesterday. She came up to me. People that I sort of know, you know, like, can I ask you, you know, my son's in kindergarten and, you know, the teacher says he will not sit still for the lessons and I just don't know what to do about it. He's a great kid. You know, look at all these. I mean, she's literally showing me, look at these things he made at his grandma's, and she's trying to, you know, make the case like, no, I've got a good kid. You know, I got a kid that's interested in and lights up. These are the practical situations that I think these families are facing. What do you tell them? Like, how do they reduce stress for their child?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic question, because that gets back to practicality and reality, right? I think there are a lot of solutions that are great on paper, but they don't actually work for real parents in real situations. Because you could say, well, what's the solution? Okay, move to the mountains and, you know, don't send them to school and like let them just run around outside all day. And that's going to be totally fine. But that's not the reality for most people, right?
Yeah, I read this funny thing in this book by Jerry Kaplan, where he was saying like, okay, you know, as society has, he was like, if someone showed up from the 1800s, they would be like, why don't you just buy a sack of potatoes, you know, work enough so that you can get a sack of potatoes once a week and like go live in a hut and be outside. And, you know, it's like, well, nothing's changed. And so I think it's a funny perspective to take, because like, I mean, that could be one answer, but it's certainly not the answer anyone's going to actually do.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think that's true, because people are doing it. Like, I have had lots of patients in my office that have moved, right? That have moved out of California, that are done with the craziness and the expenses, and have moved into more, you know, simple, quote unquote, lifestyles, where they moved, you know, to Montana or Ohio or whatever, where you're outside more. It doesn't mean you're not going to school, but, you know, maybe the life situation is different. The stressors are different. You're more in nature. So I think that is one solution that is something that people should consider. I'm not saying that's what people obviously all should do, but I think that if you're really struggling in the life that you have, or your kids are really struggling and you're not really specifically tied to a city or a location, then I think it should be a discussion that families should have about moving to somewhere where you get a little bit more nature, a little bit more sunlight, a little bit, you know, different pace, because every kid is different. And most kids, I don't think, are meant to kind of sit in a classroom all day without getting any sunlight, get outside for 20 minutes. Like, that's not what we were designed to do as humans. And I understand academics and, you know, all that stuff. I get it. But I think that just a lot of kids just can't handle that anymore. And certainly they're already at a baseline inflamed. Then you know, there's a subset of kids that just aren't going to do very well in school, and they might do better in a different environment, whether that's moving to another place or just moving them to a different school or a different program or homeschooling or whatever it is. I think that is an option. I just throw it out there as something where people say you can't do it, but you could do that. I mean, that is something that people do. I would say, just because I have an integrated practice and integrated mind of patients, I lose a lot of patients to that. I lose a lot of patients to the fact that they move from California and they don't want to be in LA anymore, and they are going to move to a more simple life, or maybe back with their grandparents, you know, the parents of the kids, and so they're going to like to that kind of lifestyle. So that's a reality. That's number one. Number two.
Wait, I'm going to stop, because I love that you said that.
Okay.
Because I think people make fun of that idea. And truth be told, I've had people say the same thing to me. I think people are like, "What are you? I'm supposed to move?" That type of thing. I think that's the response. But what an inspiring and interesting perspective that you have, that people are actually doing it. And I've had people, I had someone who came up to me at a conference, and she was like, because of your podcast, we sold our home in the city. We moved to this plot of land in the country. We don't even have a house. I was like, yeah, I didn't really tell you to do that though. I had someone else said the same thing that you just said, Joel. They said our kids were struggling and we decided that we wanted to homeschool and we didn't have the financial means to do that, to drop to one income. So we moved back in with my parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm so glad you're saying it. People are doing these things for the sake of their children, for the sake of setting a different pace or having a different environment. That's powerful.
And can I just say, it's on the extremes too. It's not just that you have to be very wealthy or don't have the financial means. I see it on both ends, because I take care of very, very wealthy people, celebrities, and, you know, all sorts of things. And then people that don't have a lot of financial means, the whole wide range. And there are celebrities and famous people that get a second home or a third home. You know, a lot of them are not living in LA anymore. They're living mostly in the other places because they want that lifestyle for their kids. So there's those people that have that kind of means. And then there are the people that are like, I can't make it in LA anymore. I don't feel like I should make it. And so they move to somewhere else too. And I mean, just think about the decreased levels of stress that you would have as a parent if you don't have a huge mortgage and, you know, you don't have to worry every day about some of those stresses that you have from a big city like traffic and all that. It makes a difference. I mean, that cures diseases for some people. It really does. I've seen it. People move, they go to the ocean, you know, they live a different lifestyle and yeah, you get better. I mean, if stress is the underlying cause of your chronic condition or, you know, something in your environment that you're being exposed to every day, like pollution or whatever it is, and you move to somewhere that doesn't have it, then you can get 100% better, 50% better just based on that. And I've seen it many times.
Wow. You wrote Be Tough and Strong. It's an interesting, like I had someone come up to me and say, look, my kids are struggling. You know, I know that we need to pull them from the school situation that they're in, but I'm a teacher as a dad. He's like, but I'm a teacher and I'm afraid it's going to reflect poorly on me. I was like, it's going to have to reflect poorly on you. I mean, that's a choice that you have to make. I mean, you're the father. And if your kids are going to thrive in a different situation, even though people are going to question you about it because you're a public school teacher, like you have to do what's best for your kids. So, and I think that advice, it used to be, you know, you just kind of go along. But to your point, you know, if we're at 50% and we're maybe heading toward 100% of kids, it's like something has to be done. And so I would say, you know, I was a former teacher. If your kids are in those environments where they're in third grade and they're getting homework, like I absolutely would not do it. I would not do the homework and I would be very nice about it. Or I would say, look, my Joel says, you're like, whatever, the pediatricians are writing.
Blame me. Yeah. Blame me. Yeah.
Then we're not going to do the homework and we're going to take every day that we can off until we're truant. You know, I think you get some, like, I don't know, 12 extra days a year where, you know, possibly I like this. I like this thought of like, not what can't I do, but what can I do? And can I take every advantage of, I liked the pace word. Like if everyone is stressed, you're going to have to change your pace. What are ways you can do it in the situation that you're in? You know, I don't think anybody really takes advantage. Like kids can take time off of school. This is not the end all be all for them and for the rest of their lives. So take those days, you know, stay home.
Right. And it's your child. Right? And that's what I think is the key is parents need to take back their power, right? You need to take back that you know best for your family. And you need to do the research, get the information that you need, and then make the decisions that are best for your family. And yeah, some people might not agree with all the decisions that you make, but you have to do what's right for your kid. If your kid is thriving and a Mensa student and doing great in school, then you probably shouldn't pull them out of school and put them in the middle of the forest. That doesn't make sense. But if your kid is struggling every day and can't get the work done and is the kind of kid that needs to be outside and more active, then you might have to make the decision for your family that that's the right thing for you. And whether people agree with it or not, too bad. I mean, this is what it is. You got to do what you have to do for your family that you think is correct. One of the big purposes of my book is to de-stress parents, to remind parents. You know, if you go back to like the earliest books in pediatrics, Dr. Spock, he's like, you know, he finishes the book with like, you know more than you feel like you know, parents. And he was talking, you know, specific to moms at that point. But it's like, we do know a lot more than we feel like we know. And I've noticed this in my practice that parents feel like they know less and less and less. They feel more stressed about every little thing. They don't feel prepared, but there's no reason that you should feel that way. The biggest life change, I think, is that we don't live in a village like we used to. So you don't have all the immediate access to grandparents and everything like that. So I think that is a big change, but we have more access to information than ever. You know, if you go back, like we had lead paint everywhere. Doctors were using cocaine and heroin and other drugs to treat basic things and mercury and all of these things. Like we're so far ahead in terms of where we used to be in terms of our knowledge for all of these basic health things. But yet we feel like we don't know what we're doing. And I think a big part of that social media and seeing this curated feed that isn't reality. And we're watching, you know, this picture perfect feed of these influencer parents. And, you know, I might have seen that parent that day coming in crying about how difficult their day was and how they didn't sleep last night and how things are amok and they're so stressed about the reflux or whatever. And then you look at their feed that day and it's a picture of like everything perfect and like couldn't be more blessed. I'm so lucky. Everything's perfect. And it's like, that's what we see, right? Nobody's posting a picture of like their kid running amok or them crying, right? If they have 5 million followers. They're not doing that. They're just posting a beautiful picture of the thing that somebody paid them to post about for their nursery, right? That's what we're seeing. It's not real. It's not real what we're seeing on social media. It's fine to look at those things, but it's just not real. And everybody is going through all of these stresses, but it's not really as stressful as we make it out to be sometimes. A lot of times parents know what to do. They just don't necessarily trust their instincts.
So good, Joel.
On weekends, we're typically off on another adventure. Whether it's a scenic hike or a quaint town visit, I keep my Vessies with me because they effortlessly adapt to every twist and turn, ensuring comfort and style in our sometimes spontaneous escapades. Whether it's with the kids or just my husband and me, which is pretty rare, I love stepping into a great outdoor adventure with Vessies Stormburst boots to capture the beauty of springtime landscapes. Their robust style is perfect for our nature excursions, adding a little dash of elegance to our outdoor explorations. The Vessi collection caters to every style. Whether you're dressing up for a night out or gearing up for a weekend hike, these shoes seamlessly blend into your wardrobe while offering the practicality of waterproof footwear. Ready to refresh your spring wardrobe? Vessi has you covered with footwear that fuses style with practicality. Head over to Vessi.com/outside to explore their versatile collection and automatically claim your 15% discount on your first order upon checkout. That's Vessi.com/outside for 15% off your first order.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
What about exercise? This is one of the parts of seeds, right? This is the first E, exercise.
The most relevant to you, huh? the being outside, the seeds.
Yeah, sleep. I mean, I actually think a lot of it, you know, I mean, obviously when you go outside, it reduces your stress. I mean, it's interesting to look at it. When you go outside, you move more. When you go outside, I mean, it's just a part about it, a lot of times the air is cleaner, not always. When you go outside, maybe you're snacking less, maybe kids are playing. You know, when we go outside, it's an interesting piece. It's like your kids, they can only eat what you bring with you. And so there's a little bit, I mean, there's times like, oh, we got carrots and that's it.
Yeah.
You're hungry because you can run around and that's what's in the, you know, the lunch cooler. So, I mean, it's sleep. I mean, sleep is very affected by circadian rhythm and exposure to full spectrum sunlight. So
yeah.
I was looking at those things and thinking there's a lot of crossover here.
Oh, yeah. But I was talking about exercise because I think that's like such an important point in that, first of all, you have to, again, go backwards and look at history, right? And look at what we used to do. We weren't exercising. We were living, right? You were farming. You were helping out in the home. You were cooking. I mean, you go to, you know, maybe not necessarily in America, but you go to other places around the world and you look at like the 90-year-old grandmothers who are in the kitchen rolling all day and they look like they're 50 years old. And you look at, you know, you watch anything on the blue zones, which are the areas where people live the longest, and nobody is exercising. They're not going to the gym. They are walking uphill. They're farming. They feel useful and part of the community. They're doing stuff. And I think that's where we really failed, I think, ourselves and our kids, in that we have created a society where we need to exercise as opposed to making our lives involve movement. I think that some people are really, you know, determined they're going to go to the gym every day and do all that. But that's not the best way in my mind to stay fit. It's just to move. You look back at pictures from 100 years ago and everybody was thin and you know, it's because we ate different food, but also they were moving. They were working. They were working in the factory lines. They were exercising, but their life was exercising. And we and our genetics have evolved over hundreds and thousands of years to move, and we're not moving, which is creating chronic inflammation in the body. And also we're meant to get sunlight, right? I mean, think about what people were doing forever. You're meant to be outside most of the day, if not all day. That's what everybody did forever. It doesn't mean you shouldn't get outside and get bad sunburns. You know, that's not the point. But I mean, you know, most people used to be outside for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours a day. And that was just the norm. And now we're exercising. We're like, hey, let's go to the playground. Hey, let's make sure we go out to the, you know, play soccer, whatever it is. And those are good. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't do those things. I'm just saying that we need to be mindful that we're actually having to physically think about these things instead of just doing it. So as a parent, you need to be mindful that no matter what you're doing, it's probably not enough in that sense. So we just got to create a lifestyle where we're making sure that they're moving and playing and doing more to the best of our ability. And that, I guess, goes back to your point again of school. That's tough for some kids because they're sitting a lot of the day, which is tough. So then us as parents, if that's what they're going to be doing, we have to really make sure that on the time that we do have with them, that we're moving and not plopping them in front of the TV or the computer as much as possible. And if you need to be tough on them, then be tough on them. You're the parent, right? Like if you know that they need to move more, then you have to be like, all right, you got 1 hour of TV, that's it. And the rest you're going to be moving.
Mm-hmm. And kids are so grateful for that when they become adults. They really are. Mm-hmm. They know. I had talked to this Kim John Payne. He said, low screen and no screen kids are enduringly popular. I was like, so profound. He was saying, Joel, like, I mean, he works with kids like you do. And he was saying, you know, it was always going to be kids that can talk about like TikTok. And I've been around kids like that. They can talk about TikTok and that's pretty much all they can talk about. Mm-hmm. But when, you know, reality or other situations, I mean, they just don't have the capacity to have those conversations. And so they can seem real popular in the moment, but when you're talking long-term, it matters. And I think, you know, when our kids hit their early adulthood years, they look back and understand, look, I had a fuller life. I had fuller experiences because my parents limited screen time. And that's what we're thinking about. So exercise, there's movement. You know, like I saw a statistic that kids are sitting, I mean, out 4 to 6 hours a day. And we're talking not even only at school, but, you know, like shuffling around from after school activity to after school activity. What might movement for children look like in today's family?
Movement could be as simple as just going for walks as a family, getting outside. I think if you live in a city, it's really important that you go to nature as much as possible. So whether that's on the weekend, if you have some time, going for hikes, going out as a family, you know, if you can walk to school, it's not necessarily possible for everybody, making sure that if they do have time outside at school, that they're taking advantage of it and not just sitting inside all the time. As the kids get older, making sure that we don't put too much pressure on them in terms of academics. I think it's important that they understand that it's important, but not to the point that they're so stressed that they feel like they need to sit inside and do all the extra credit activity and instead of going outside and walking and playing, getting them involved in extracurricular activities, whatever it is that they enjoy. I mean, I don't think you should be pushing kids to do an activity they don't like, but if you can expose them to many different opportunities, hopefully they'll find something that they like, whether it's soccer or dance or whatever it is, and just get them moving through something that they love. Then it's not exercise, it's not work. It's just they want to go to soccer practice, they want to go to the gym and, you know, jump around, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. I don't think it makes any difference. It just matters that they're moving and not sitting.
Yeah.
When it comes to screen time, I'm not against, I know a lot of people are super against screens. I'm not super against screens. I don't think that screens are the problem. I think what you aren't doing instead of being on a screen is the problem. I think if, you know, for a toddler parent, I have a whole section on this, and it's a little bit contrary to the American Academy of Pediatrics and what other people say, but it's just my opinion. And I think that for a parent, if you're traveling somewhere and you're on a plane, then like a screen can be super useful. If you need 15 minutes to prepare something or go to the bathroom, then instead of having a toddler tantruming, putting them in front of an educational program, that can be very useful and a net positive for a family. But if you are putting them in front of the screen instead of them being active, instead of getting outside, instead of parenting, then that's where you run into a problem. So I don't think the screens are the problem. I think it's what they're being used for. That is, and I don't feel that parents should feel ashamed to use a screen to give themselves a break for a few minutes or to do what they need to do. And there are a lot of great educational programs out there. The screen is not going to screw up your kid. It's not, I don't think you're going to learn as much from a screen. I almost know, you know, based on the research, like you will not learn as much as a screen from, as you will from teaching them. You know, maybe in the future, if you were listening to this and AI is happening and you have a hologram, okay, maybe at that point, you know, that might be more on par. But at this point, it's passive learning. It's not zero learning, but it's passive. It's not as good as reading a book to your kids, but it's better than a kid running around having a tantrum if you need 5 minutes to take a break. So I don't have a problem with that if you use it appropriately. But again, it's like, just de-stress. Don't worry so much. It's not the end of the world, but focus on what you can control, which is getting them exercise, and all the rest of the time, make sure that you're actively playing with them. Make sure that you're getting outside. Make sure that you're getting things for them to do that they can be moving. And then you don't need to exercise. You're just having family time.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a great answer. I talked to that Dan Buettner from Blue Zones. Mm-hmm. And when he came on the podcast, he was walking. Like, I mean, he did it during a walk. He's the only one. Mm-hmm. I've had 250 episodes. You know, he's the only one that's out there walking. I was like, oh, it's really cool. He's like living what he actually preaches. And even the ideas, this is like, what can you do? And there's a Katie Bowman. I talk about her a lot because I really like her. She's from Nutritious Movement. And, you know, she says like, but well, okay, if you can't walk to school, can you walk half the way? Mm-hmm. Can you drive part of it? Mm-hmm. Can you park at the very, very back of the parking lot and walk in? So I just like looking for the ideas of what can we do? I think that's great. And I agree. It's, you know, the screens, maybe we have screens, we talk about it. And I liked how Kim John Payne put it, like no screen and low screen. And we're aiming for the low screen, I think. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I really wanted to talk about some of these things you have on your boards because I like them. Here's one. Let's raise children who can name plants and animals, not celebrities and brands. Can you unpack that one for us?
Yeah. So I guess my question to you is, do you know what the number one life goal for kids is now, like teenagers?
No, I have no idea.
When you survey them, the number one like profession that they want to have.
Oh, I would guess a YouTuber.
Well, influencer, yeah. So it's influencer, and it's like very high. I've seen some things like 67% of kids, teens, their life goal is to be an influencer. And that to me is insanity. I mean, it's just, I have no problem with people being an influencer or posting things, but to have the goal of that, it's insane. You're not learning anything about life. I mean, who knows if those social media platforms are even going to exist in 15 or 20 years. It's going to be something, you know, probably totally different. I think, you know, if you want to be a professional and learn something, learn a skill, and then teach people about that, that's great. I mean, it's great to help people and teach people, and that's what social media is so great for. But to have the actual goal of that, I mean, it promotes people doing silly things and smashing heads against things and jumping off buildings and doing all this stuff just to get likes and clicks. And that's not a, I don't think it's a very long-term goal, but it goes back to the point of, you know, if you're learning about celebrities and brands and you know all these things, but you don't know how to cook and you don't know how to name a plant and you don't know what's around you, I mean, that is a big problem. And we are there. I mean, most people don't know how to do anything anymore. Nothing basic. And that's a problem. If the power goes down for 2 weeks, like, what are we going to do? Where are you going to get your food from? You know what? How are you going to get water?
Yeah. I just talked to this farmer, Joel Salatin. He said, practical skills never disappoint.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we're only disappointed in the things we can't do. I was like, oh, that's good. And I had read even recently too, I can't remember the book, but they said something like, you know, in a world where everyone wants to be an influencer, you know, it takes a special person who's like willing to read what other people are writing and, you know, to be the one that, I don't know, the quote was good. I'm messing it up. Anyway, that's a huge statistic. 67%, their life goal is to be an influencer. Wow. What have we created? How about this one? Let's teach children to use their hands to create and garden, not to swipe.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a similar point to me, but again, we've lost the basic skills. I mean, it's so, first of all, from a health perspective, just getting in dirt and planting is great for you to touch the soil, touch the dirt. We are completely, we're so outside of the food system at this point that most kids don't have any idea where food comes from. They don't understand how food is grown. They, you know, think they get it at the store, it comes in plastic, like this is how food is grown. And, you know, the reality is basically anything you're getting at the store is not that good for you anymore. I mean, there's better and worse, but everything's been mass produced for the most part. Everything's been shipped across the country, around the world. It's sprayed in all sorts of chemicals, and you lose a lot with that. If we don't understand where food comes from, if we don't understand how to make our own food, if we don't plant any of our own food, we're not getting any of that nutritious, that's most nutritious food that you're supposed to be getting, that you would get from a farm otherwise. And this is what we have always had. I mean, the food that we're eating is not nutrient dense anymore. It's just not compared to what it used to be, because it's mass produced. And I think that, you know, if you look at the statistics, you go back 100 years, that maybe 50% of food or more was grown in local farms, and people knew how to garden and they had home gardens. And now it's less than 1%. It's less than 0.1%, I think, if families have a home garden or do any gardening at home. It's insanity, right? I mean, that everybody should have a garden. Everybody could plant a few things. There are a few things that you could make that are super easy, but we forget how easy it is. You literally just need soil and a seed and water, and then some stuff will grow depending on where you are. But kids need to learn so they appreciate it. They don't appreciate where food comes from. They don't understand. And the farther we get away from the basics, the less healthy that we're going to be. I think the only way in the long run that we're going to be able to get back to health is local food. We're never going to be successful in our health if everything is kind of farm raised and shipped over to us. It's not a sustainable model for the next 1,000 years. It's not going to happen. Everybody needs to start gardening. We need to have local places that we get our food. It can be a mixture of both, sure, but I don't think that's a good system. And so that's why I think we need to get kids back to gardening, and school should be teaching. It should be part of school. You should be getting outside and having a school garden, and some do, and that's great, but it should be a big part of every school, because what's more important than touching dirt and learning how to make food? And again, going back to, if there's ever a problem in the world, then if you don't know how to plant a seed, where are you going to get food from?
And I remember when we first started gardening, I was like, sometimes there's a little, like, you learn a lot and you can't learn it unless you do it. So it's important. I agree. If you have one, then you're constantly learning. Each year you get a new chance to learn new things. Well, I love too that the garden hits all these things. It hits all the seeds, doesn't it? It's stress reduction. It hits movement, exercise, it hits diet, it hits sleep. It hits all of them. I'm talking about the food that you're eating, but also kids are moving and they're outdoors and they're digging in the dirt. So a lot of crossover benefits there.
Life is full of things to manage. Your work, your family, your plans, and your treatment. Consider Kesimpta, ofatumumab 20 milligram injection. You can take it yourself from the comfort of home. If you're ready for something different, ask your healthcare provider about Kesimpta and check out the details at Kesimpta.com. Brought to you by Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
And then, okay, I want to do one more, but before we get there, I am super curious. I was super curious about this, about the cover of your book, because you said, so the book that's coming comes in August. It's available now for pre-order. If people want to order ahead, it's called Parenting at Your Child's Pace, Navigating, did I say that wrong? Joel, I want to say it right.
It's Parenting at Your Child's Pace, the Integrated Pediatrician's Guide to the First 3 Years. So you had it right. You were going on the right track.
I had it right at the beginning. Okay. Well, here's the thing, because this is what I was reading. There's a little blurb about it, and it says this: parenting at your child's pace navigates the first 3 years, balancing science and natural wellness in parenting, a stress-reducing guide for modern parents. So that was like the little blurb, like a one sentence of, you know, what is this book? But it's called Parenting at Your Child's Pace, the Integrative Pediatrician's Guide to the First 3 Years. And you said there was a little bit of a battle about the cover. And I thought that was actually really intriguing. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. I don't think that, I mean, I certainly didn't know all the back end of anything that's involved with anything, you know, besides medicine, right? I mean, we don't get any training in social media. We don't get any training in PR or talking when you're going through med school. You don't get any training about publishing. So these are all things that you learn as you're going through. But as I was going through the process, I mean, I never thought about the cover when signing a deal to get a book, right? You don't think about these things. You're like, okay, they're going to pick something that I want, right? It's going to make sense for the book. And then, you know, as it turned out, that wasn't exactly the case. And they really wanted to have products on the cover that I didn't want to have there because, you know, again, this is a book about integrative parenting and thinking about health. And it goes through a lot of the regular parenting topics, but they wanted to have toys on the cover. And toys that were older and probably had some chemicals in them and were not vetted by me in any way. And even in the book, we talk about some of the chemicals to avoid. And I really wanted something that portrayed parenting, but also holistic wellness, because that's really what the book is about. It's a blend. It's a molding of your basic parenting questions, like how to potty train and tantrums and what's going to happen in the hospital and all those things, but also the wellness side of things. So to me, toys didn't really fit for a cover, and certainly not toys that might have had chemicals on them, or from what I'm looking at them, are not even the kind of toys that I would recommend to my patients. And so there was a big battle about that for many months, but ultimately they can put on whatever they want because it's their book. And so the battle went on. I kind of sent them research and everything. And I did make my case, and they did eventually change the cover to something else, not to what I wanted, but at least not from what they had. But it really hit home for me. So it ended up being, you know, that the regular kids to the pediatric office's toy, but more like in a cartoony version.
The one I saw, so, the final cover, it's the
yeah, which is cute.
You're moving the thing around. And what was it before that?
So before that, it was like actual toys and actual, oh, you know, like, yeah, like baby toys. just like cars and blocks and things like that. But I thought that, you know, they probably were very chemically toys. They weren't new modern ones. They weren't made of wood, that kind of thing. And I just thought it wasn't a good representation of the book, but it really hit home to me why we're in this health problem in the first place. I mean, this is a book about pediatric wellness, and they're choosing PR over the wishes of the author, my take. And they're proposing something that they feel like, I guess, you know, it's going to sell the best. I don't know. I didn't agree with that, but that's what they felt like. And that's fine. It goes back to like, well, this is what's going on in the world, right? If we're worried more about PR than health when it comes to everything that we're doing, then how are we going to be healthy? And this is a book that I'm reading about health. And I didn't even think the cover was representative of the book. And so that's where the battle came. And eventually we came to, you know, agreement on, I guess, what the cover would be. And I still wouldn't be what I exactly would pick, but that's fine. And I think it's just, I mean, it's funny. It's funny to me. I don't know. It's like, it's something that you learn. And I'm an open book, so I'm happy to talk about things. And that is what happened. I just think the cover should be representative of a book, right? And it wasn't.
Yeah.
In my opinion, at least, and at least they listened and they did change it based on what I had requested to some degree.
I mean, not only is it not representative, it's like opposite.
Right, exactly. And that was my argument, was like, how can I have a cover that I don't even have products on that I would recommend? It doesn't really make sense. And I know where they're coming from, and they probably have their big teams that kind of figure out what should be there. But this to me is just a window into the reality of the world. And that's why I feel compelled to share about it. And that's why I even put it there, because I could just not say anything, you know, and it just, the cover is a cover. But I think it's interesting.
You're telling parents, be tough and strong, you know, do something. And so you did the same thing. It's very similar, I think, to all of the messages that you share. Just like stand up for what you think it should be and what you think is the right thing. I want to point out a couple places where people can find you if they're looking for more resources. Because you have this parenting masterclass series, and you worded it so cool. It was like a TEDx talk mixed with masterclass, you know, 20 minute things of all of the questions that you're, you know, wanting to know about pregnancy. And, you know, it's a whole lot, you know, it's like a lot goes on when you become a parent. So if people are interested in that, gain new parenting skills in under 20 minutes, you can find that at raisingamazingplus.com. And I'll put that link so people can find it, raisingamazingplus.com. You're on Instagram at Joel Gator. @home_of_baby, which those are fun clips. And you have this apothecary with cool things, VaxGuard for robust little warriors, organic elderberry, Mother Nature's Cuddle in a Bottle. Now that's some good marketing right there, Joel. Vitamin C, Immune Bust, Dr. Gator. So if people are interested in that, they can go to Tiny Roots Apoth, and there's probably a website link there too, and I can throw that up. So just lots of resources out there, and then your book comes out in August. I want to hit one more topic, and then we always have a final question that we do. But one of the things that you had on your dry erase board was, oh, I thought this was good. No stage of motherhood is forever, and that is both a relief and a heartbreak. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think that life is so fleeting. Again, we're going back to, we're so stressed about everything, and it's important to be in the moment, because we will never get this moment back again. If you look at the amount of time we have with our kids, it's such a short, finite amount of time. And I think that things are always changing. So I think that's a stress relief, and that, like, you know, you can do something today and we can all forget about it tomorrow, or we'll move on and there'll be the next thing or the next problem. So it's a stressful thing, but it's also an empowering thing too, because it's something that you can understand that we're going to move forward. There's a lot of support out there. There's so many things that we can do. And so everything has both sides to it. And at the end of the day, what it comes back to is family, love, and just being there, and just trying to get back to something that's a little bit more simple, a little bit less stressful. And I think that to me is kind of the underlying message there is that we just, some things are stressful, some things are not, some things are more stressful. They seem more stressful in the moment, but things move on and things change. So it's empowering that the moments matter, but at the same time, they are also fleeting as well. So just be present in the moment and make the best of every situation.
Yeah. Like, you would see that as someone who's working with kids and family, that the mom of the newborn comes in freaking out about, you know, this or the other thing, and you've got perspective. You know, like, you know, in 2 years, you may not remember this. It's going to be something else. Both a relief and a heartbreak. Joel, you are really offering so much to families, and you're witty. I love that this position of strength that you come from, which is, hey, you can do something, and you should do something, and you should know what's going on, and you should be aware. And you talk about just take small steps, keep moving forward. A really practical advice for families. I'm so grateful you're here. I can't wait for your book to come out. I do love the final cover's cute. I mean, I think everybody is remembers those types of toys where, you know, you're moving the thing around and think it turned out cute. And I think that's a really cool thing to know, too. I mean, sometimes it's fun just to learn about the things you have no idea, right? Like a cover? I don't know. Like, what's going to happen?
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, I think it's cute. It's not what I would choose, but I think it's like amazingly cute. And again, it's like, you know, that's the reality of the world, right? There's like what you want and what the real situation is. And that's why I think it's important to talk about even just stuff like this, because it's like, oh, you know, someone's making a book and like, okay, not everything goes their way, but then maybe that's going to be like the best cover in the world. I don't know. You know, people are going to be like, oh, I love your cover.
You know, you fought for what you thought was right. Yeah. And you were able to make some change, even though it's not perfect.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it is perfect. I don't know.
We're going to fight for things. You know, it may not look exactly like how we wanted it to look, but also, you know, it's still going to be great and fantastic. We always end our podcast with the same question. What is a favorite memory from your childhood that was outside?
Favorite memory from a childhood that was outside? Oh, man. I think one of the things that was the first family camping trip that I was on, and just being outside with my family and being in a natural park, it was in Ontario, you know, kind of like a major park, and just sleeping outside for the first time. I think that's like just such a different perspective on when you grow up in a, you know, regular old community in a house and just cooking with a fire and swimming and being out there. So like maybe that, and then mixed with like being at the cottage for the first time, going to my like aunt's cottage and just swimming in the lake and doing the things that, you know, now you look back and you're like, oh, that's pretty typical, but it wasn't really typical for me being in the middle of Toronto. So I think that if I just look back and just realizing, kind of stepping back and saying like, oh, wow, there are other ways to live. There are other things you could do. You could be out here and, you know, it's a lot of fun. So I think that to me is, at least from my childhood, the thing that stands out the most.
That's beautiful. I love it. Joel, thank you so much for being here. So excited to read your new book. You're offering so many resources to parents and you're really encouraging. I love what you're putting out because it's like a quick, like, oh yeah, this is important. Or even just like being a mom is the equivalent of 2.5 full-time jobs, like things like that, where you're like, okay, yeah, well, this is hard. It's hard for everyone, you know, but I can still do it and I can still show up and try and make the best decisions possible. So thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me on.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.